Hi, everybody. I'm Joshua Danziger.
And I'm Ethan Canfield.
Today is Thursday, October 7th, 2021.
And this is The Young Perspective, where we talk about America's biggest political and social dilemmas from the eyes of two high schoolers.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of The Young Perspective. We have an interesting one today. So a couple days ago, I was thinking about an interview that took place between Meghan Markle and Oprah Winfrey. It must have been last spring, March or April or sometime.
Yeah,
like
sometime
that.
Around then.
Maybe in February. And in that interview, we got a peek into what the British royal family looked like. Today, we're going to be talking about the place of royal families in 2021. And what that should look like.
So the British royalty and royalty kind of everywhere right now has kind of become almost obsolete in a way. They have no real power politically. They're kind of just a figurehead who stands over and is the face of that country's politics, even though they actually have no real power in terms of politics. Now, they still have lots of money and they get money from taxpayers. They still have their mansions and their palaces, and everyone still follows them, but they don't actually create laws or get to decide anything in terms of judges or courts. And they're not like the prime minister or president who, you know, rules over a country and decides things like that with like military wise. They have no real political power.
So once upon a time, a lot of monarchs had absolute power. If you were in the UK 500 years ago and you were the king, you could do what you wanted. Not until, you know, in the last two or three centuries did power go from absolute monarchs or emperors, etc., to democracies, parliaments, senates, etc. So that's a recent thing. But even after the power shifted, you had these old kings and queens and monarchies. They had still had many of the same traditions, yet they had no power. They had the crowns, they had the palaces, you know, they had all the traditions, but they didn't have the power. So how are they going to keep relevant without the power? And that is the challenge. With the power, they can continue after generation because they controlled things. The goal of a monarchy is to continue and to live on. So with power, they could live on. But after the power is taken away from them, how could they stay relevant and continue?
One of the most important ways that a monarch keeps its power today is through media. So in our modern age, they're everywhere. You see them on billboards, on TV, and in videos, and movies. They're all over. So basically, they're like the head of their country, and everyone's covering them. The news is covering them. Every time they do something, maybe a little bit scandalous, there are newspapers everywhere reporting on it. And so they get in so much money and so much viewership through this. And so this gives them lots of power in terms of they can't actually make any laws or anything like that. But everyone's watching them. Everyone is wondering what they're going to do. And so in that way, they do have lots of power.
So what they need to do to continue is they need the support of the people. Because without the support of the people in the country, they become irrelevant. And the taxpayers don't want to fund them anymore. And, you know, the monarchy ceases to exist. So how do they keep the support of the people? Hundreds of years ago, the people hated the monarchies. I mean, you know, at least in the UK and a lot of countries, the monarchies were the ones who were either enslaving them, causing them to have terrible living conditions, taxing them a ton. They hated them. They were the guy in charge who was making their lives misery. But after the monarchies changed, they needed to make the people like them, because the people are the ones paying for them. So how did they do that? Ethan talked about they did the media spectacles. They went from, you know, far-fetched, far off powerful people to humans. They humanized themselves. So they threw grand weddings and funerals. And when they have a baby, they have a great ceremony and it's very exciting. You know, parts of an average person's life, the regular person, they show those parts of their lives too. And it makes every citizen in the UK and every person in the world feel connected to them and feel like, you know, I have a real connection and relationship with these monarchs because I understand what they're going through.
Right. And these weddings, they're huge. They're broadcasted on international television around the world. Millions of people watch them. And it's made into this massive fairy tale, beautiful weddings. And so everyone wants to see it. They want to see the queen. They want to see the princess get married. And so it's very big. It's very important. And this makes it practically the royalty, like the British family, it becomes like a reality TV show where everyone is doing something and it's very scandalous or it's very good and everyone wants to know what they're doing. And so it basically turns this family into something that people love to watch, whether that means they read about them or they go and visit their palaces or they see them on some TV show or they hear about them, and basically they're everywhere. And so it becomes this TV show that everyone watches all time.
But I like that. It's like a fairy tale because it seems so fake and so real, but it's everybody's dream. Everybody wants to have a grand wedding where they're brought up in a carriage, you know, and then there's a red carpet and they walk up the red carpet into the cathedral. That's a fairy tale. It's a dream. It's a movie. And everybody sees somebody living this movie and they want to emulate that in their own lives. But, you know, the royal families can humanize themselves and be, you know, have a connection with each individual viewer, but how do they make sure that they're most applicable and most relatable to the most amount of people? And one of the key ways they do this is by staying neutral. They generally don't involve themselves with politics. So royal families won't, you know, make statements about politics this way, that way, right or left, because whatever way they go, they're always going to have 49% of the other, you know, the people in the country on the other side are going to disagree with them, and they're going to lose a lot of their supporters, and they can't afford that because they need more than 51% to survive. So that's why they usually act as neutral figures, and they're the great unifiers of a country. During COVID, Queen Elizabeth went up and gave a bunch of speeches in front of national television, international television. She recorded all these speeches where she was talking about how the country needs to shut down and do all these things. And she made everybody feel like on all different sides of the political aisle that they were all in this together, the great unifier of the country.
Right. And this brings up the question of how do they stay neutral when there's a big political movement or some sort of crisis that it's very politicized. And like a good example of this is Black Lives Matter. It was the royals were kind of called upon to take a stand and give their opinion on this. Do they support the movement? Are they against it? And while some royals were supportive, the majority of the royals were supportive of it, they put it on their Instagrams. They kind of had to do it in a discreet way. They weren't very public about it. They kind of did it in somewhat of a public way because they're trying to express their opinion, but at the same time, they're also trying to stay neutral. And sometimes this can backlash in their faces and they can get in trouble for this and people can not support them. But usually if they're liked enough, this will blow over and they'll end up being okay. And so they're good at stopping this and being okay with these crises.
We know an interesting crisis happened this year in February. We were talking about that Oprah Meghan Markle interview. She is the Duchess of Sussex, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Something like that. So she married, Prince Harry married into the royal family. And she said when she joined the family, there was a lot of animosity towards her. And she said that may have been because she was Black. And, you know, the royal family in the UK has traditionally been Anglo-Saxon, Christian, and white. And she did not fit that narrative, also because she was American. So the royal families were not, the royal family was not super accepting of her, but they got you know, over that in some time and they accepted her. But then there was a question when she was pregnant, they wanted to know, one of the members of the royal family wanted to know what race the baby would be, what the baby would look like. And in the interview, that was a real shocker for Oprah to hear that, you know, somebody in the royal family would even ask a question like that, what color the skin would be. That's an inappropriate question to ask. So there is some old time animosity and prejudice left in the British royal family, like there may have been hundreds of years ago. So they're, you know, in that way, they're having trouble keeping neutral.
Right. And then lastly, we want to talk about the idea of, are monarchies and royalty obsolete today? Are they not important? Should we just get rid of them altogether? And while we think that, you know, they're just a figurehead, they don't do anything politically important, they actually are very important to the politics of the country. One reason for this is that in multi-ethnic countries where there's a lot of diversity, they can actually hold it together. A good example of this is Belgium, which has a lot of different ethnicities that maybe are kind of clashing heads and are hostile towards each other. The monarch can actually center as a neutral figure that holds everyone together. And this can also be done with other places that want to change power. You know, if you want to go in a country like, let's say, Cambodia or Jordan, Morocco, and someone wants to change the politics of that country drastically, maybe more extreme organization, the monarchy actually serves as something that will block that from happening. And so it creates a situation in which neutrality and unity are held together very well.
Well, one of the best examples of this is the Habsburgs were a royal family that's lasted for hundreds and hundreds of years in the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And when the Habsburg monarchy fell, the empire fell, and then all the different Balkan states within the empire, all the different states broke up and split apart. So these are people of different ethnicities, and the monarchy is what held them together. And when the monarchy fell, the group fell, and they could no longer stand together.
So while monarchies are not perfect today, and they seem like they might seem trivial and unimportant, they actually have a great deal of importance in the politics of many countries. And so it seems like it will be a long time before these monarchies will be dissolved.
That's going to conclude this week's episode of The Young Perspective. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. You can find more at our website at theyoungperspective.net. Find us on Instagram at @the_young_perspective. Later this month, October 31st, Ethan and I are doing a live event partnering with Parker Mays from Taking a Breath podcast, where we're going to have speakers come talking about how to have tough conversations. Be there, be square. We'll be posting more information on our website soon about this event. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And remember,
this was The Young Perspective.